Hello and welcome to another totally not Sam Spade ripped off episode of Dave Wright's podcast. I'm your host, Dave Wright. Each week here, I like to share one of my short stories and the next chapter from my novel, Soul. As usual, if you'd like to know more about this week's chapter, then stick around at the end. For now, let's get into it. Please enjoy Chapter 6, The Barley Boys. Turning left, coming out of the loaded run, ducking down one of the many unnamed alleys, I hoofed it along its dank depths. I don't like to think I'm a paranoid man, but I take care of myself. I've survived this long and would like to continue this trend. When I'm on a case, especially when trying to track down someone who would not take kindly, even violently, to me poking around after him, I keep a low profile. Emerging onto the optimistically named Lakeshine Boulevard, I make my way across the city, flowing with the night's crowd of lads out on the town, their prey of lovely ladies and vice versa. I slink through the doglegs and alley runs where I can, forced to rejoin the flow of humans occasionally, watching the city change from the upmarket swank to the old town. Every city has its own version of the old town, the slums, the shamleggers, the snigs. Call it what you will, but they are the same the world over. Where people who put in a day's less than honest work will gather, where the boys in their rumpled blues won't step foot without a good goddamn reason if they want to get that foot back. The smell of the city changes with its looks, going from lived in to just plain used. I hitched my coat closer to try and fend off the growing wind biting into me, letting my hand brush my peacemaker and headed deeper into the old town, the backyard of the Barley Boys. I have done my fair share of work for them over the years. Everyone in this city has at some point need to find a missing pretty or person, and they have ended up at my door. The boys were no exception. The jobs I did for them were nothing untoward, but I don't like the idea of our connection becoming common knowledge. The Barley Boys always presented as a clean lot, all squared up in their Sunday best with those fedoras perched on their heads like starving crows. Everyone knew they were up to the dodge, but nothing could be linked to them. You do them wrong though, you slight them in any fashion, perceived or otherwise, and the retaliation is always swift, brutal, and cannot be traced back to their shiny reputations. There are many reasons I am not excited to see their juke joints swim into view as I round the corner of Wishbone Alley and rejoin the snaking throng of humanity. The lights from the ground floor windows spilling onto the cobbles in front, even from this distance, I can see the places jumping. Sure, I'm in the right place, but still not clear of what I'm after. I head straight to the front of the loquacious. Ignoring the line of waiting hopefuls, I nod to the two lads on the door and head in. Akko and Charlie Horse know well enough to let me pass. Inside the loquacious, the ground floor is filled with dancing, or at least writhing to the pumping noise. I give the room a quick going over, trying to pick out any faces in the crowd that I should avoid. The lights making it difficult, and I hope just as difficult, for one of the many I'd rather not be seen by. Glancing up at the frosted ceiling, I can see the thumping feet above on the next level of people trying their best to make this a night they will remember, or maybe forget. Skirting around the edge of the whirling mass of bodies, I head past the eager hordes after a drink, nod to Jeannie when she catches my eye from behind the bar, and continue towards the back. Pulling up in front of two imagination-challenged men who are standing guard, I curse inwardly, as I don't recognize either of them, hoping they know me.
Here to see the Barley Boys. Tell them Soul wants a quick word.
I stare straight ahead, trying to ignore them. The first mobile wall leans down to get a better view and try and intimidate me. I resist the urge to take his stupid eye out as he stares at me.
Lads, I hate to hurry you, but I am on a bit of a tight schedule here,
I say to the door. The other ill-defined mound of flesh grunts and disappears inside. Mental note, he was disturbingly fast on his feet. Not super fast, just big guys are not usually that quick. I try not to check behind me in this tight corridor. It was difficult with that fat face still staring at me so close I can feel his breath. His friend finally returns and leaves the door slightly ajar and waves me in, both watching me like I was going to try and start trouble right here. Ignoring them both, I step through to the den of the boys. The smell of smoke and liquor have long since stained every part of this room. A thick pall of clinging smoke is lazily shifting on the low bare beamed ceiling. It sticks to the back of my throat as I hungrily inhale. I miss that smell. Two tables facing the door, nicked and stained, a sharp contrast with their crisply suited occupants seated behind them. Fat blue smoke swirling around their sunken faces from the cigars they were both happily chomping. One of them, Bren, Kanan, I can never tell the two of them apart, spits out to one of the suited fighters on the couches.
Alrin, why are the royals so down this month?
Alrin shifts on the couch, causing it to creak under his bulk. I glanced at him and felt a small twinge of guilt.
Oh, sorry, boss. It's in the notes. Old widow Asira up and died on us. Heart attack last week. The Asian palace has been out of business since. Her daughter's having money troubles.
Not old Asira. That bird was tougher than me. Heart attack, you say? Send some flowers to...
The boy catches himself.
No, she had no need for flowers. You make sure the funeral arrangements are made and put out the quiet word that any money troubles for her, we sort them out.
The men behind the battered desk slowly work their way through the rest of the pages. Standing there, trying to not look bored, I wait them out. I know how to play this game. Finished, one of them looks up, pretending to have just noticed me.
So, pull up a pew. Can I get you anything?
His brother looked up at the mention of my name and nailed me with a glance. The Barley Boys act all folksy, but I would bet my non-existent laundry lady they knew I was coming the moment I stepped out of Wishbone Alley.
Kanan, Bren, wouldn't mind a dose of the good stuff if you're offering.
They flashed a surprised grin at me as I pulled up a chair that looked like it had seen more than I ever had. Kanan, or Bren, grabbed an unlabeled bottle of pale amber from his desk and some tumblers. We waited while the short ceremony was finished and the first gasp of appreciation hit.
So, we haven't called for you. We've not lost nothing.
He paused to savor another mouthful.
What do you want?
To the point. There is a reason these two lads have ruled most of the old town for the better part of a decade. No one knows for sure what super they have, but they have one. They could not have held their own against the Knockermen or the White Hands otherwise.
I am looking for information. Now, the information I am after is linked to a man, not just anyone. A super. I'm not here to threaten or cajole.
They nodded, slightly impatiently.
We are all businessmen here. I'm just saying that what I'm after, you don't want to share.
Pausing slightly to mimic his mouthful and to try and settle my nerves as I was about to do something really, really stupid. I swirled the liquid in my mouth, enjoying the burn, and swallowed before leveling my gaze at a spot between them.
I'm just not leaving here until you do share.
I had walked into the lion's den, and not just challenged the lion, I'd kicked him squarely in the balls and pissed on the floor. On the way here, I had tried to think of the best way of doing this. I knew they wouldn't want to share. What kind of crime boss wants to admit failure? I needed to know, though. I needed this ghost to work. If I am to come in nosing around or all servile-like, they would have filled the air with vague deflections in their own way, and the ghost would be put to rest like it had all those years ago. I had to show I was serious. They respected that. The Barley Boys had their own honour, black and twisted, but it was still honour. Leaving the sentence to hang in the air like a condemned man as all the muscle in the couches was suddenly stretching those precious suits, I waited for the explosion. The boys shared another hit of the amber and continued to stare at me for a long time, long enough that I started to twitch involuntarily. Finally, one of them spoke to the muscle without taking his eyes off me.
Gentlemen, if you would give us the room, please. Our friend here needs to learn about respecting boundaries.
The suits all shot up at once, the unwinding of all that tension almost lifting some of them off the floor. They filed out, leaving me alone in the room with two of the most notorious killers in the city. The sounds of people renting fun for the evening filled the room and then abruptly died as the door was pulled solidly shut. I tried to not think about this being a metaphor. One of the boys breathed out softly.
So, you come see us, actually join us for a drop for once, and then straight into a demand? What were you thinking coming out with that? We're gonna have to hurt you now.
He shook his head sadly.
You know we don't like to hurt our friends, so...
The brothers looked at each other and went back to shaking their heads slowly. My face a speaker, the nervousness fading as I was still breathing, I took a stab.
Bren?
No change in either of them.
Look, I'm sorry I had to pull that shit, but you know me, I'm serious about this. I need some info that only you guys can provide, and you will not want to give it to me.
Bren filled his tumbler again without offering me one this time, and took another hit.
Well, I am curious at the least,
he said after finishing the tumbler.
What is important enough for you to risk getting your Tomka cut off, so?
Levi Prime.
Again, those stares. I knew I was still guessing. This was from a rumor that Tommy himself could not verify. Maybe they don't know I'm guessing. I searched their faces for a clue that I was on the right track. These boys could dice with the devil himself. I continued.
Look, you hired a Levi. I know about the job he was on. The final one. The one that went pear-shaped. The one in the old town docks with the diamonds.
Again, those stairs. I was now hoping there was a track for me to be on, and it didn't have an oncoming train.
You didn't even know you had a Prime, did you?
There, a twitch. Pay dirt. I forced onwards.
You hired him as some local muscle. He knew his way around a few of the old hunting grounds. He was a Levi, so you knew he didn't have a super. Some low-level jobs to start. Nothing serious. A shakedown or two, a heist here and there.
I warmed to this. I know what they're like.
He showed spirit, showed some brains, more than the usual mouth breathers you get.
Tilting my head to the now vacant couches.
You decide to bump him up a bit, to see if you could stand spending actual time with the guy, see if he was worth getting access to the inner circle.
Focused on them, I let my mouth run. I always did my best, flying by the seat of my pants.
It was the diamond shipment. It was supposed to be easy, and then the knocker men showed up. Outnumbered, totally outgunned, wondering how you two were going to get out of this with your dicks still in one piece. And then...
I paused to settle my tumbler back down on the table. Hey, I earned a bit of dramatic flair.
Three Ball showed he was a super. Jimmy thought it was speed and teleportation, by the way. But Jimmy was a coward who was hiding in a corner. It was a Prime. Except it was not the Levi Prime. He had the same super though, spawning more and more of himself.
I was grasping now, running out of steam already. I was done, gone as far as I could. I hoped that was enough, banking on them knowing I got this far by myself and would keep digging. Trying to be as casual as hell, I nodded to the bottle of amber and my empty tumbler and asked,
how am I doing so far?
Staring them down while Bren drained his fresh tumbler, they finally took a break from trying to bore through my eyes into the back of my brain. They shared a glance. Kanan stubbed out his swisher and slowly shook his head.
You son of a whore, oh.
Okay, breathe again. Except, maybe not now that I've pissed off two violent murderers and shown that I know secrets they wish to keep buried. Maybe I don't relax just yet.
We owe you, Sol,
Kanan began.
But not like this,
Bren finished.
If you need this so bad, you need to bring some more meat to the table.
I had built up some solid debt with these boys over the years. Nothing like keeping the heavies on your side in case of a rainy day, and baby, it was pissing down. I knew it alone wouldn't be mustard though. They needed a bit more to make them keen.
I know, boys. To make us square, I got you this.
That twinge came back. I nodded to where one of the heavies had been sitting.
Alrin, he's a sandwich, been squealing for the last few months, telling them a bit here and there.
I knew throwing them Alrin would do it. A snitch in their inner circle? I'd been hanging on to that piece of meat for a while now. Been meaning to have a quiet word with the lad about his career choices, but had not had the chance. I never would get that now. Their usual airtight expressions gave away the whole show he was in store for right there. Nodding.
Yeah, this is solid.
Fair trade, Sol. As much as it hurts.
There was a brief moment as they filed Alrin away into his own little box, from living to dead, but just not aware of it yet. Then they were all business again.
What do you need?
Tell me about that night. The night you found out you had a Prime.
I settled back into my chair.
Tell me everything.
Again, they looked at each other, but I knew they would not hold back. I could bank on their black honor. Kanan lit up another swisher and waved the smoke away.
It was a simple run that night. Yeah, he was running with the big boys now, but we were there for an after-school special. Babysit a shipment from offshore. Diamonds. Smuggled out past the cartels, and almost pure profit. No one knew the ship existed, let alone what its cargo was. Mikey, or Three Balls, he styles himself now, was on lookout. There we were, holed up in a warehouse on the docks, playing cards and having a chin wag. If anything went untoward, it was supposed to be a dog barking for one man, a howl for a pack.
Kanan breathed the smoke deep and held it. His voice mingled with the blue.
Instead, we got they fucking fucked us. Mikey was hollering as he ran back into the room and dove under our table.
Kanan takes another long drag as Bren picks up the thread without missing a beat.
We flipped the table in time to stop the bullets from bookending our lives. A dark warehouse at night, boxes and crates everywhere. It felt like a goddamn army had descended on us. Carrying behind the table was us, Mikey, Noel the Stick, Jimmy Fourhands. Five guys versus an army. We split in our own directions as the table was being hammered by shot after shot. Kanan and I slowly made our way towards the ladders and high ground. No idea where the other boys were. It all quietened down. Then I heard Mikey scream like he'd been hit. Then another voice joined in and both silenced as every gun in the joint started smashing home in the direction of the two voices.
Bren paused to refill his lonely glass and Kanan gestured with his cigar as he continued.
The next part, I'm not sure what happened as it got all kinds of weird. Remember, we didn't know then he was another bloody Levi Prime. We damn well knew by the end.
Bren mumbled. Kanan nodded.
The shooting continued randomly and then yelling and confusion filled the already messy fight. Me and my brother were holed up together, eyeing the ladder from our hidey hole when we realized that no one was shooting us. So we headed up to the catwalks, maybe see the battle, maybe help out. He say battle,
Bren adds.
But he means bloody fucking massacre. Yeah, as I said it, it was all dark and shit in the warehouse, but...
He toys with his cigar for a moment.
Mikey was everywhere. Not saying he was fast or some shit, no. He'd be like, literally, everywhere. There were Mikeys all over the floor, some living, some dead. I saw a group of them swarm over another shooter who tried to take them down. The poor bastard killed five or six Mikeys before he was overwhelmed and beaten to a bloody pulp on the floor. This little nightmare, it was happening to every man fucked down there. They could kill Mikey, sure, but it didn't matter. He would die, then another two would be created to take his place.
The mask of a killer slipped from Kanan as he looked down and took another drag, remembering what he had seen that night. Bren continued softly, almost reverently.
You know what it's like, Sol. It felt like fucking hours. It lasted maybe 4 minutes. There were no more gunshots or screams, just the sound of 100 identical men trying to deal with what had just happened. Then every Mikey still standing or moaning in the joint suddenly started to shake and shimmer, and then BAM!
Bren brought his hand crashing down on the desk, sending papers flying.
There was one, like fucking Highlander or some shit. Just one Mikey standing there alone.
Bren shook his finger at me for emphasis.
He looked around, punched a hole clear through the crate holding the goods, grabbed a fistful of our diamonds, sucked in the copy he'd just made and fucked off. We stayed up there for another 30 minutes or so before we found our own pair of stones to get back down.
They lapsed back into silence while my mind was thundering. Another Levi Prime. It couldn't be the real one. Another Levi capable of not only duplicating himself, but one who could absorb himself at a distance. If he was the Seeker, then he had gotten better control of his super than the real Prime. How much better had he gotten the last 5 years? I spoke without thinking.
Have you seen anything of him since?
They both looked at me like something that would scrape off their shoes.
So, we hit up every fence we knew, every contact we had, to try and track this bastard down. Have we ever tried to track down a specific Levi?
He paused as he realized who he was talking to.
Well, yeah, I suppose you have an idea of what we're up against. Short answer, we didn't find Dick.
I could feel the spell fading, the goodwill I earned draining from the air.
What was the name of your diamond contact then? Boys, I need something to go on.
I was pushing way too hard, hoping there was a shred of play left. They know I'm not competition in their smuggling, so I wouldn't burn one of their own. I waited out the silent conversation between them, then I finally got...
Bronski. He has the diamonds out without anyone knowing about it.
They both looked at me.
Anyone.
Understanding what they were saying, there's only so far friendship and favors will take me, and this was the bitter end. I had to ask, though.
If you were so set on hiding what happened, then why let Four Hands live? He was the only loose end, and that man likes to talk.
They looked at each other again, Kanan flicking ash off his cigar.
Truth be told, so we forgot Jimmy was even there.
They looked embarrassed.
By the time we remembered, we had a quiet word with Jimmy, and he had no idea what actually happened, so we thought it best to let sleeping dogs lie.
Lucky Jimmy was such a coward then. I realized they were both patiently waiting for me, and shrugged uncomfortably.
All right then. As always, I thank you both for your help and liquor.
I stood up slowly, with my hands by my side.
Let's do this.
I watched them both almost reluctantly push back from their desk and head towards me. Breathing in the used smoke deeply, I closed my eyes and concentrated hard. This was worth it. They began. The group of suits gave me a searching look as I walked out of the room, holding my head high and my broken nose higher. I watched Alren as he filed back into the room and felt another pang, although that could have been my fairly sure cracked ribs. I nodded to Jeannie on the way out, who watched me stumble past, favoring me with a rare wry smile. I grinned back. The ghost was alive. That was Chapter 6, The Barley Boys. I love Brennan Kanan. I have written a short story that I will release at a later date that covers their beginning as major players in the city and reveal their super. I didn't want to release it before this chapter, as I don't want to spoil their super. Leave a little mystery. As always, I hear lots of little nods and fun things in this chapter. The one that I struggled with for a while as it came out in the writing, and it fit so perfectly that it's not until I was doing the edit that I actually caught it. The anachronism of Bren saying, like fucking Highlander or some shit. That implies that Highlander still got made in this world. I was not sure what to do about that line, as I loved it so much, but knew it didn't fit at all. I then remembered Terry Pratchett saying something to the spirit of, don't let reality get in the way of a good line, and decided to roll with it. I liked writing Sol showing up with a half-baked plan and just accepting that getting the shit beat out of him was worth the risk of maybe getting the info he was after. He's so stubborn, so intent on his chase, that he is willing to throw everything away for it. It's not healthy, it doesn't make him a good person, but damn if he isn't fun to write. Second stop on his hunt and he already has a broken nose and cracked ribs, from people he would consider friends. Being unpowered around supers, you'd have to roll the dice and play whatever hand you could. When I originally wrote this scene, it was very different. I had made the mistake of sitting down to write without understanding my characters properly. So, Sol and the boys were not fleshed out in my head. So when they talked to each other, it felt like I was forcing it. I had an endpoint they had to get to, but no way of seeing how or why they would even get there. It was actually the next Sol scene that made me throw it all away and go back to the start, to really sit and figure out the characters. I started from scratch as I knew it would only get worse and worse if I kept forcing it. That was the first time I hit upon the technique that I still use for character creation now. I built them a Dungeons & Dragons character sheet. Use what you know, right? That gave me the starting point, as weird as it sounds. Like, what are their base stats? What kind of weapon would they use? What are their skill points? I have spent a lot of time playing D&D, and using that as the basis, it really allowed me to start thinking of them as people, instead of a nebulous unknown thing. Since then, as I have written more and refined down my ideas I now know for a character to feel alive to me, I need to know, what are they like while drunk? being sick, having sex, depressed. If I can't see them doing these basic human things, they're not a person. They're a cliche to me. There are a lot more nods and tips of the hat in this scene, but I don't want to spell them all out. Well, that's all for Soul this week. I hope you'll join me for my next short story later this week. Next week, we jump back in time to continue the Seeker story. I hope you enjoy. You can always find more information on my website, davewrights.com. That's davewrights.com. I also have a Patreon if you want to go check that out and help support me. Until next time, take care.